Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson with you live. How's it going?
If you can't tell, I've got a big smile on my face.
Yeah.
Your first flight was in a J3 Cub, right?
My very first flight when I was 11 years old, we were living in Bozeman at the time, and I flew by myself down to Fort Lauderdale, where my uncle was a captain for American, and he wanted my first flight to be in a Piper J3 Cub.
Oh, man.
And he found this flight school like 2-3 hours away from where he lived in Fort Lauderdale and had to get checked out in it. I don't know how this was legal, but he said the altimeter didn't work. And so the instructor, the whole time he was getting his checkout, was like, all right, how high do you think we are? And he had like an altimeter on his watch. And he'd be like, yeah, about 1500 feet. Oh, very good. Very good. You know?
Oh my God.
So we got checked out, and I remember we had to get up early, and I slept in the car all the way down there, and this thing had to be hand propped.
Yep.
And
no electrical
that
system.
Was my first flight. That was my first flight. He was like, he's going, you sure you got the brakes, right? And I'm like, yeah, uncle, I got them. It's amazing. They're so much fun.
I'm getting checked out, getting my tailwheel endorsement, getting ready to buy a 185 this summer.
Congratulations.
I'm learning on a Cub, and I'm like, this plane is amazing. Like, why didn't I learn how to fly this plane a long time ago? This is so much fun. It was pretty cool. The history of the Cub, it was a plane that basically all the World War II pilots learned on. I think they called it the Grasshopper or something like that. But no flaps, no starter, no electrical system, basic VFR instruments. You can fly with the door open. You got to hand prop it, like Tate was saying. And I've been having a blast. Super fun. It's cool. I actually went back to the airport where I used to fly skydivers at Harvey Airfield, just north of Seattle. I haven't been there in 22 years. I was 19 years old when my very first commercial flying jumpers. When I was 19, drove across country, lived at the airport in a little apartment there. And I walked in. They recognized me. I was like, this is cool. They know me from 22 years ago. Yeah, they were like, hey, you're Ryan. And my account number was my old cell phone number that I had back in college. And I felt so special. So if you want some good flight training, this is not an endorsement or an advertising thing, but Snohomish Flying Service does a great job. They have a J3 Cub. So if you want to get your tailwheel or endorsement, you can go up there.
That's cool.
They've got amazing instructors. Anyway.
Well, maybe next summer I got to get up there. Have you ground looped it yet?
All right. So I think the brake locked up or something. We couldn't figure out what it was, but basically the answer is kind of yes, but no damage, no walking away or anything like that.
Amazing.
I've done my two wheel landing. I've gotten the, three pointer down pretty good, I think. And man,
nice.
But yeah, no, it's a squirrely plane. And for those that are listening, they're like, what the heck are these guys talking about? It's this, if you Google J3 Cubs, it's this yellow plane, it's tailwheel, right?
So canvas. Yep.
Canvas. So it's like
fabric
cloth.
Airplane. Yeah.
Yes. Fabric airplane. The fuel Beautiful. Gauge is this little stick on the dash, like the screw on the fuel tank has a little thing, and that's how you tell how much fuel there is. There's like a little stick that goes up and down. And anyway, it's not like in a gauge, but tailwheels are fun because you steer the airplane from the wheel in the tail versus the wheel in the nose. So there's a lot of different things going on with the plane. And they take off a lot faster. They land a lot faster, so you can go to more fun places. So anyway, what are we talking about today, Tate?
We're talking about life insurance. We're going to get in. We've talked about this before. We've got some great previous episodes that I mentioned at the end of the show. So if this is the first time you're hearing about this strategy, I think you'll appreciate it. It's something that we use in our own financial lives. And honestly, it's one of these things where it's just such a no-brainer. We keep bringing Rod on because they provide a really great service to our listeners, to our investors, to us. And we just appreciate them so much that we just keep bringing them on because they're wonderful. They're no hype. And so today we're talking about high cash value or whole life insurance and how to flow cash through those policies in order to increase the rate of return on your alternative investments like real estate.
Yeah. And if you listen to the whole episode, we're actually going to explain to you how you can make an extra $1 million over your lifetime just by implementing some of the things that we talk about. So if you want to make an extra million in your lifetime,
not even lifetime, maybe 20 years.
20 years. That's right. That's right. 20 years. If you want to make an extra $1 million over the next 20 years, hey, check this out. If not, if you're not interested in another million, you know, maybe go listen to another podcast or listen to the radio or something. But I love this episode. It's gloves off. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Rod, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Rod, we're going to skip the background and intro because everybody knows who you are. You've been on our show probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 times at this point. But, you know, here's the thing, like, I hear so much noise about be your own bank, infinite banking. I don't know. What are the other things that we hear about? What are the other token?
Yeah, family bank.
Family bank. Yeah.
Family bank.
Yeah.
I hear it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, people try to put all these confusing words out there to confuse everybody, which drives us crazy, which is why we have this podcast.
You know, we're just going to cut straight to the chase today. These are policies that a lot of sophisticated investors, ourselves included, own. And, you know, go back if you want to really learn all the mathematics behind it and how these policies work. Go back. We've had episodes before. We just really want to get into the benefits of them today because they really are just no-brainers. And, you know, after utilizing mine for a couple of years now and seeing the power of just being able to snap your fingers and be able to get access to cash, not having to go through an underwriting process to get a loan. Like, yeah, if you need 50 grand or 100 grand to go invest it, you know, you don't have to think about where to pull funds from. And it's this constantly churning snowball that not only has this benefit for your family, but it's an investing tool. It's a place to flow money in and out of. It's like you're, instead of using a savings account, you use a life insurance policy, and it's a fantastic strategy. So we really want to just simplify it. And like I said, cut straight to the chase today. And at a very basic level, you know, how does this stuff work?
Yeah. The infinite banking thing, it drives me crazy because it's like, guys, all this is just you're just taking out a life insurance policy. It's got a cash value. You borrow against it. You use it to invest. The money that you've got, some of the interest that's accrued on the policy usually is slightly better than maybe what you borrow against it. And that's it. That's the end of it. Probably over 50% of our investors that I talk to have a policy that are borrowing against it to do this. This isn't some rocket science thing. And so the industry likes to put a lot of lipstick on it and call it all these different fancy marketing terms. And, but that's what it is, guys, you know, in 5 minutes or less, or actually we're not even, you know, 3 minutes in. So
that's right.
You know,
so Rod, over to you. We'd love to hear your take on this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'm totally on board with what you guys are saying because we get it all the time. People get confused when they hear infinite banking, and maybe I'll just kind of break that down a little bit so I can create the difference. What's the dividing factor between what we're doing and what we call the investment optimizer compared to this other kind of packaging and infinite banking? Because where it gets confusing is you have a lot of people out there who will say, hey, set up this life insurance policy, and what you're going to do is you're going to use loans to go out and go on vacations and buy your cars. And even in their extreme level of it, they're saying even make your regular expenses, pay your mortgage, right? Pay your regular bills, put it in the policy first, take loans, go pay those bills. And the problem is when you start to look at it from that standpoint and you're looking at it and saying, there's value in having a loan in the policy against my cash value, and that's where I'm going to derive the value of the plan. Well, now you get into, number one, you go into rabbit holes that are unnecessary in terms of the types of policies you get into, the right types of loans that you restrict yourself to. But then secondly, now it really does become overly complicated and people are like, well, I don't want to do that, right? I don't want to be paying my mortgage by taking a loan against my life insurance policy. And I agree. I don't think anybody should ever do that. If you're doing that now, stop it. And the reason is because when we talk about the investment optimizer and we're saying, let's add extra return, an extra layer of growth in addition to the interest or the growth that you're creating in your investments, that's something I can simplify and I can break down the numbers and show someone pretty simply how this works and how we have a whole bunch of flexibility with it and backup plans and, you know, all different ways that we can approach this. And what the other does, the infinite banking, all that conversation does is it just complicates it. So what people assume when we say, hey, we're using high cash value life insurance, using loans against it, they'll automatically put us in that category of infinite banking, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the difference? Like, what is the difference between, you know, quote unquote, air quotes, infinite banking and what you guys specialize in? Money Optimizer is just a phrase that you've coined at Money Insights.
And— yeah, exactly. Just because we want to differentiate. Yeah.
Right.
So the difference is when we say we're building a whole life, overfunded life insurance policy, we're putting money into it, and we're going to use that money to go out and invest. That's all I have to think about. In other words, how do I know how much to set up my policy for? Well, how much am I setting aside for my investing each year? And then we just build a policy to capture that money.
Right.
And then I can loan against it and go and invest. Right. And when we do that, so let's just say, just use round numbers. Let's say someone says, well, I'm generally setting aside $100,000 a year to go out and invest with. Okay, great. We'll set you up a policy. You're putting $100,000 a year into it, but you're not committing to $100,000. When we set these up, we create what we call a funding range. That's going to be anywhere between 20, 25 as a minimum, up to $100,000 a year as a max. And so, like I said earlier, there's a whole lot of flexibility in here because we get this question a lot, especially from pilots. Well, what if I get furloughed? Or what if something happens and I don't want to have to put $100,000 a year in just because that's what I said? Okay, great. Because we look at both sides. Okay, my target is $100,000, but we have to look at the other end and say, do you feel like you could at least hit that minimum if you got furloughed, if something else happened? And as long as the answer is yes, then great. Now we have a track we can run on.
Right, right. And that's critical when you start one of these policies, is not letting it lapse right early. Because eventually it's self-sustaining, you can stop contributing to it, and it just, the growth takes care of that minimum. But in the beginning, you know, a big mistake that people make is they commit to too big of a chunk, and then they find that it's too much to continue feeding. They let it lapse, and the whole thing disbands, right?
Yeah.
Before we get too far into more details, somebody might still not know what the heck we're talking about. So let's rewind to new hire ground school. Right. You're sitting in ground school, HR man or woman comes out and says, congratulations, you just got hired at Hawaiian or Delta or Alaska or whatever it's called. And, you know, here's your you get a life insurance policy. Right. And they say it's the death benefit based on whatever the top wide body pay is. I think that's what it is at Delta. And it's based on it's 3 years of salary, I think, on the wide body. Don't quote me on that. And you say, great. I am set up. If I die, God forbid, my wife is going to get, or my spouse is going to get a check on the doorstep the next day of something so that I can make sure my family can survive without me. And that is a term policy, right? What we're talking about is a whole life policy. Now, there's different levers in this, which I'm sure Rod will get into a little bit, but you can basically use this policy differently in addition to your term policy, and you can borrow against it typically at a rate that is sometimes lower than maybe what you're getting in your policy, because you're put money into a whole policy. It's actually going to earn income. It's going to produce some type of return because it's going to be invested in something, and there's an annual amount of money that you have to sort of, like Rod was saying, kind of commit to it. You know, every year you're putting money in. The best part is you can borrow against it to make investments, which gives you a little bit better return because of that interest arbitrage, that interest difference that I talked about. But also, if you die, there's also a death benefit that grows and grows and grows. Now, you're not doing it, you know, when Rod is saying that the money optimizer and the investment optimizer, he's optimizing your plan to sort of minimize the death benefit, maximize what's called cash value, which is the thing that you can borrow against. So this is why when we say, hey, 50% of our investors, I don't know if it's 50% or 20% or 30%, but a lot of our airline pilot investors say, I am using a leveraged policy to make this investment with it. because they're getting an optimization of their policy, the death benefit, the cash value. Yeah.
They'll typically say, yep, I'll fund in 3 or 4 days as soon as I get my life insurance loan sorted. Usually it doesn't even take that long, but they reach out to their life insurance.
That's right.
Policy. They take their loan. I've done multiple policy loans. It's fantastic. And it's, you know, it's a forced savings mechanism as well, which I'll say, you know, you don't have to, if you commit to $100,000 a year, you don't have to, but there's an auto pay of, you know, what is that, $8,000 a month-ish that's going to be coming out of your checking account every month. It's forced savings, just like your mortgage. You know, we always say, you know, your primary residence isn't always the best investment, but it is a powerful wealth builder because it's forced savings. You're always going to pay your mortgage, right? And so as that loan amortizes over your lifetime, you're going to be building that wealth, that net worth. It's the same thing as your life insurance policy. You know, that's just an auto pay that goes out. And if you're a little tight on cash and you need to take a break, you just call Rod and you say, hey man, I need to coast on a few months of payments. And that's fine. It's your policy, right? It's not like a bank telling you, oh, you have to make this payment. You can think of this. I mean, I think that's why it got coined infinite banking, is because you're really chartering your own bank that you're building over the course of, you know, 5-10 years. And once it's built up, you have this massive family bank, right, in air quotes, that you can just draw on at any time. And if you pass away, you get that death benefit. And if you end up needing long-term care later in life, you can actually draw on that death benefit before you die. And it's a tax-free transfer of wealth mechanism to the next generation. I mean, they're complete no-brainers.
Yeah. And your term ends. That's why it's called term.
Right. It's renting life insurance.
Yeah. And it's the cool thing about it, you know, at the airline, it's probably offered to you for free, which is good. You have something, but, you know, after 60 or 65, it's gone and you don't have this anymore. Where, Tate, I'm glad you brought that up, which is this just goes on and on and on and on and on. And it's kind of like your money in that respect.
You know, it's funny. I just got this coffee from the coffee shop, and the owner of the shop was there. He owns a couple of coffee shops around town. And he's like, oh, what are you up to? You're up early. I'm like, that's actually pretty late for me. And I got a podcast in 45 minutes. Oh, who are you interviewing? And I was sharing what we're going to be talking about. He goes, oh, I have one of those. He goes, yeah, my policy provider just reached out to me. And he's like, you know, you can take like $250,000 loan out, right? And he's like, wow. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, I need to go pull that and invest it. And he's like, I even got bank debt that I'm paying at 8%. I can borrow against my life insurance policy. I don't have to fill out any paperwork. I don't have to like get approved for this loan. I just pull that cash out. I'm going to be paying 5.5% on that. You can pay off this bank debt at 8%. It's a way better situation. I'm like, yeah, exactly. See? So people are doing it all over the place, even the coffee shop owners.
I'm glad you made me think of something, Tate. You said, you know, call my policy guy or whatever. Rod, I'd really like to unpack, like, you can go to Northwestern Mutual, you can go to Principal, probably, you can go to all these different life insurance companies. Why go to you? Why go to Money Insights? I mean, I know the reason why, but, you know, for our listeners, you know, why are we sort of bringing you on? What makes you different than just going to a regular policymaker?
Yeah, it's a great question. We're a broker, so we have relationships with all the different companies out there that offer these policies that are worth considering. And when I say that, what I mean is not all policies are created equal, right? That insurance companies create a product that does certain things. In our case, what we want those things to do is we want the most of our money going into the cash value, least cost as possible. So we just compare them all against each other and say which one gives us the best result, the most money that I have now to go out and invest with, and the long-term best IRR on the money that's in there growing for me. And we're just going to pick that company and go with them. So that's number one. Number two is that most likely if you just went off the street into a, you know, insurance office, even if you described it exactly the way I'm describing it, most of them just wouldn't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Right? They'll tell you, oh yeah, I'll do that for you. I'll build that for you.
It's like going to H&R Block versus, you know, someone that knows real estate taxes. You know, it's like you're not going to get the same sort of intricate thing. And I also wanted to say just real quick too, like you work with our pilots, right? You've been working with our pilots for now how long? 2 years or something? Maybe a year and a half?
Yeah, going on.
So
yeah.
you get the furlough, the concerns, the industry, all these things that pilots are going to go through. You're kind of almost anticipating at this point, you know, and then you know the types of investments people are making with Turbine, Spartan, and things like that. So
for sure,
it's really fitting.
No, I think that's exactly what I was going to say. You know, you guys understand alternative investments. I had a policy, and you know, for our listeners that have listened to some of the earlier shows, I talk about a policy that I walked away from. I walked away from $30,000 in a policy that I just wasted because it was a financial advisor who was supposed to be a fiduciary, who was supposed to, you know, be understanding what I do in my financial life, the types of things I invest in. And he wrote an IUL policy, an index universal life policy that was set up more like a pension. And I'm like, this is, you know, as I got more sophisticated, I realized this is useless to me because I know what I'm doing with my cash. I want to be investing in real estate. I want to be able to borrow against the policy. And the way that he had set it up, this money was locked up for the better part of a decade. I would have had to continue contributing to it. So it was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to cut my losses and walk away from this. So it's really important to work with someone who understands alternative investing and understands the power of the velocity of money, of being able to borrow from these policies immediately and start utilizing that cash balance to make other investments outside the policy. Because we've talked about the fact that these policies are not investment vehicles in themselves. If you're going to park money in it and never borrow against it, there are way better things to put your money into, way better investments, right? The idea is that you are cycling money in and out of it. It is a tool. It's something. It's a repository for your cash.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that you said, one thing that, Rod, you've kind of brought up before is, you know, a lot of pilots, they already have the policy. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Tate, because sometimes you're like, well, crap, I already did the policy with somebody else and I don't even know what I have. And I don't even know if it's working or the right one. The best part is, Rod, you'll take a call with that pilot, right? And you'll go through with them what they have and what they don't have for that matter, right?
For sure. Yeah. And hopefully, like, there's a chance that it will work, right? That what you have is going to work and you continue on where you are and you keep going, and we'll confirm what you already have. If there are adjustments that need to be made that can be made, then we'll tell you about that, right? So if going back to the IUL, if it's an IUL and it wasn't built correctly initially, but we can reduce the amount of insurance, or there's other things that we can do to get it closer, still maybe not ideal, but closer without having to just walk away from it, then great, we'll give you those options. But more than happy to review and talk through what you have in the context of what your ultimate goals are, and then talk through the options of where to go from there.
I love it. Yeah. And we'll have a link in the show notes to how to schedule a time with Rod if you're thinking about, you know, connecting with you. When you do connect with pilots, let's get into like some of the things that come up, right? Like, you know, you talked about furlough earlier, not being able to contribute to the plan. I love that. What are the couple other things that always come up with pilots that are maybe unique to our situation?
Yeah. So maybe two other things. One is underwriting. So again, especially pilots, or if they're newer pilots, or if they are, say, they're, you know, part-time National Guard or Air Force, and they're still flying these, you know, fighter jets and or training other pilots. We've gone through situations with those, and so we have a better feel for what to expect as it relates to those kinds of things.
Can you clarify that? Because I think so what you're talking about is the willingness of the policy writer to insure that person because they're out there flying fast jets.
Yes. Higher risk, right?
Higher risk.
And so there are a couple of different ways the insurance company can approach that. They can either say, hey, for as long as you are continuing to, especially if you're a trainer, right? That's really the one that kind of is the highest risk. Because if it's just on you and you have, you know, 5,000 hours in that plane, then
what's the saying? In the first year of flight instructing, the student will try to kill you. The second year, you'll try to kill you. And then the third year, the airplane will try to kill you. I think that's the quote. So well, God bless all those flight instructors out there.
Well, and I'm sure that these underwriters at the insurance companies aren't super familiar with aviation, right? So this is something that you have to navigate.
And that's where we can help bridge that, to kind of communicate with them and have a realistic example of what it is. Because we've actually had trainers who are not in the cockpit. They're doing other types of training. And so anyway, that obviously different levels, but we can break through the noise, get to the really heart of the matter, and work with the underwriter to get the best option available.
Fantastic. Thanks for the clarification there.
And then the last thing I was going to mention is you mentioned earlier, we work with people in alternative investing. We are alternative investors ourselves. We live it. We speak it. And so as it relates specifically to the types of things that your listeners are investing in now, or even if they're new to this whole world and they're just learning, they're just starting to set money aside with the idea that at some point they will be reaching out to you guys or someone else to make an investment. Getting a policy set up to capture those dollars is now's a good time for that. So I guess what I was thinking in this point was building the flow to match where you are in your life cycle of as an investor and putting the policy in with that. Sometimes it means waiting 6 months so the timing is right because you have a liquidity event coming, and that's when your money's going to break free. Or again, if whatever money you're setting aside, sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to wait till I'm ready to make the investment, then I'll put the money in. And I say, well, that may be okay, but maybe not, because there's a process that we have to go through to get the policy set up and initially funded, and then 30 days later you can access it. And so being ahead of that game is going to be much better than waiting until the investment time is going to come. So
I'm glad you said that, because you know, I think there's a lot of our listeners, if you've listened to all 140 or so episodes of us, you know, the theme that kind of emerges from this podcast is you're going to go to the airline, you're going to get all your money dumped in the stock market, which is great. I mean, 18-20% defined contribution, the spill cash or the max cash balance plan, that thing is going to also suck up any extra cash now, it seems. And then you're going to be sort of over levered in the stock market. And so we talk a lot about alternative investing, real estate investing, diversifying outside of that. And one of the things that we have and we talk about is this concept of layering, right? Like layering, I should say, your investing, right? Your investing strategy. So one of those layering concepts that we talk about is going and getting a life insurance policy, a whole one that we've been discussing. And it does take some time to get it going and get it set up. I would almost, you know, and we don't give tax, legal, or investment advice on the show. We're just having friendly conversation. But if I was a new pilot and sort of getting into the airlines and kind of thinking about, okay, I want to start doing 50K, 100K a year into these real estate deals that Tate and Ryan are talking about, I would first set up a plan. I wouldn't invest, then set up a plan. I'd put the stake in the ground now and kind of like work with Rod and his team to sort of figure out what that window of investment amount is per year. And then once you kind of get that going, then maybe consider the next step to be to borrow against some of that cash and put it in here. Because now you're getting the death benefit, you're getting the cash value, you're getting their kind of your funding set up, and you're going to get a better return overall on your investment from this strategy. So I would say that's your first step versus, you know, trying to throw the first 50K or 100K you have into a deal. So just my two cents.
I agree with it. And here's where I want to go with that is, you know, it's very easy to think next year, what do you want to do for 26? It's very easy to think about, you know, what do I want in 2 years? It's even pretty easy to think 5 years out, but it's very difficult to imagine 10, 15, 20, 25 years out. And people forget that the financial decisions that they make today, magnified, amplified over 20 years, they have an impact that is just of a magnitude that they can't wrap their heads around. I mean, you can look at it on a spreadsheet and go like, wow, that is incredible what's possible over a 20-year span, but it doesn't really feel real. Let's talk, though, about Pilot A, who maybe never sets up one of these policies, uses their cash to invest, you know, and just doesn't participate in this strategy. And Pilot B, who does, they set up a policy. Maybe it's modest, $50,000 a year, something like that. and they commit to this strategy over a 20-year period. What does life look like that's different at the end of 20 years? Rod, you've seen the, you know, the underwriting and the projections on these policies. So you probably have a pretty good sense of what that would look like 20 years down the road.
Yeah. So I'll approach this from two angles. The first one is we talk about this kind of additional layer of growth that we can create on it. If you isolate the policy by itself, we can pretty safely predict that it'll earn about a 5% tax-free return on what's in the cash value, what it's doing on its own, which goes back to your point, Tate. We're not trying to make it the investment because no one I know that invests in alternative space is saying, hey, I want 5%. Okay.
Right.
But what I'm doing is I'm putting that money there, and then because I leverage against it and go invest in somewhere else, and I have interest that I pay, I have, you know, there are other things happening. So what's realistic to expect is an additional roughly 3% IRR above whatever you're going to earn everywhere else. Okay. So if your average is going to be 10, you're going to turn it into 13. If your average is 20, you're going to turn it into 23. Okay. And then when you extrapolate over 20 years, we have examples that we show where we say, hey, if someone put aside, say, $500,000 over the next 5 years and invests that and captures all the cash flows and growth that they're growing in their investments and in their policies and reinvests over 20 years, then having the policy can make a difference of an additional $1 million in your pocket. In that example, the $500,000 is actually $2 million. I was going off of $100,000 a year for 5 years, but if it was $50,000 a year for 5 years, an extra million of value in addition to all the other stuff that you've created because you flowed the money through the policy. And that's just comparing it against what most people are doing when we meet them is just socking that money in a bank account, flowing the money through a regular bank account.
Right. And that bank is making interest on your money, right? Like,
yeah.
Like your checking account or your savings account doesn't pay more than, you know, a percent or two these days. And, you know, you can be earning that money yourself. I think another key here, if this is the first time you're hearing about this, you might be thinking, well, if I'm taking a loan out, how is it still growing in the policy? And it's a key difference between, let's say, a 401k loan, where you actually have to liquidate the assets and you're going to lose out on the growth of, let's say, that 50K. You take a 50K loan out of your 401k. You have to liquidate $50,000 worth of stocks for that. And so during the time that 401k loan is out, you're going to lose out. If the market rips, that's a bad time to have a 401k loan. If the market's real stagnant or is going down, great time to have a 401k loan. These policies work differently in that the underlying growth does not stop. You're not taking the cash off temperature. You're just borrowing. You're creating an additional cash loan and essentially using the policy as collateral. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so you can think of it as your money working for you in two places at the same time. If we draw a parallel, you talked earlier about your home being a similar kind of asset. It's going to do what it's going to do in terms of appreciation, no matter whether you have a loan against it, whether you do a HELOC, whether you whatever, right? But if you do have a HELOC and you loan against it and you're going out and investing with that money, your money is working in two places at the same time because the value and the appreciation is happening in your home and you've invested it. So similarly, the policy cash value keeps growing and the money you loaned is out doing something else.
And I'll just say this, and I know this might upset the apple cart a little bit. I mean, even if you set up a policy and you do absolutely nothing with it, I mean, it's still going to grow and it's not going to be the best return ever, but you're going to have a policy. I mean, so even if you did this and did nothing, you're going to make money on the cash that's in there. It's going to grow over time and you still have the death benefit and you can transfer it. So like, I this is where...
Well, and that's what's interesting too, because we'll often talk with people who, well, I keep a couple hundred thousand emergency fund, you know, sitting over here in a high yield savings account. Well, what if it was sitting in your policy earning 5% tax free? Today, it was earning that 5 years ago, it was earning that 10 years ago.
Great point.
So that personally, that's what I do. I keep most of my emergency fund in my policy because it's a much better place to have it as well, right?
I want to ask
be
this
your
question.
Own bank, yeah.
Right. Be your own bank, right? And so I want to ask the question, you know, well, for somebody out there that's thinking, well, that sounds risky. What if I, you know, something goes wrong and I can't access that money? I want to have that in cash. What do you say to that?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say absolutely you want to keep some cash close at hand, right? So again, I just threw out a round number. Let's just say my emergency fund, I want to keep 150 grand, right? That's my number. I'm going to keep 10 or 20 of that in my local bank or in my safe or whatever, right? Because I do need access to some cash more quickly than I can get it within the, you know, 3 to 5 days through the loan. But then secondly, like you've talked about earlier, getting a loan against your policy, it's, they're not asking what you're using the money for. They're not asking any questions, right? You say, hey, I want a loan. They look and see, oh, this is what you have in your cash value. Therefore, you qualify for the loan. That's the second thing. And then the third thing I'll say is getting a loan doesn't only have to happen from the insurance company. There are banks out there where you can set up, they call it a cash value line of credit. Same principle, assets sitting in my cash value. I'm using a different lender instead of the insurance company. And when I do that, I can have quicker access than the loan from the insurance company. So if speed is important, then we can actually help you set it up in a way that you can get it more quickly.
There we go.
Yeah. And this is the whole concept of be your own bank, right? That's what people say that because I can throw all this money in there versus putting it necessarily, you know, in savings. And so just another strategy. Again, we're not telling you what to do on the show. We're just saying, hey, this is what people do. This is a strategy that you can explore. And Rod, I wanted to ask, how, as we wrap up here, how do we get in touch with you? How do people learn more about this and dive into their specific situation, their specific strategy?
Yeah. So our website, moneyinsightsgroup.com. And if you do moneyinsightsgroup.com/pilots, we actually have done a webinar with you guys. And so the recording of that is on that page. So you can go and check that out and hear a little more, learn a little more, see some of the numbers up on the screen as we walk through it. So do that. And then on that page, you'll see a place where you can find a time on the calendar, jump on and have a conversation with us. We're pretty low key. Like we're not the kinds of people who are trying to chase people down. We let the principals speak for themselves. If they speak to you and you're like, hey, I think it would be worth having a conversation around this, then we'll get on. We'll learn a little about your goals, send you a sample of what it would look like in your world, maybe send you some additional information that you can learn, get kind of dig deeper and really just answering your questions, right? Whatever's on your mind, we want to know about it. If you have existing policies, if you have other things that you know, you're thinking about, have that conversation, explore it. And then if it is something that makes sense, then great. We'll help you set it up and we'll stick by your side while you're using it. That's another big thing that drives me nuts. If you've ever worked with a life insurance agent who set up your policy and you never saw them again, bad, horrible. Like that's not the way it's supposed to work. And so especially in this situation with this, it's not just a life insurance policy, it's a strategy, right? We're using this.
Right.
And so we become longtime friends. We have regular conversations. You hear from us regularly. We want to hear from you regularly. And so as we're working through and you know, implementing the steps to accomplish the strategy.
Well, that's why we appreciate you guys so much. And, you know, our investors have had a great experience with you. I personally have had a great experience with you. And we love the fact that you're no hype. You're just straight to the point, because there's a lot of promoters out there that maybe don't have their investors' best interests in mind. You know, I think that the policy that it was set up for me a long time ago, again, it just wasn't aligned with the way that I invest. Yeah. So in any case, definitely reach out to the Money Insights guys if you are interested. If you want to learn more about this stuff, go back to episodes 47. That was the first time that I had yourself and Christian on. We've also talked it again on episode 70, again on episode 84, and once more on episode 122. So go check those episodes out if you want additional deep dives into these policies, all of the nitty gritty details in terms of, you know, how much you have to put in to the point where you don't have to contribute to them anymore. What things you can do in terms of using them for long-term care when you're older. You can actually use your death benefit, like I said, prior to you passing. Tax-free wealth transfer strategies, all that sort of stuff is packed in those episodes. So, Rod, thank you so much for coming on again. Look forward to talking with you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rod.